Disclaimer. The views and opinions you hear expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. The show tapes live most Thursdays on YouTube, 5:30 p.m. Pacific. Check my Twitter feed, ActionZaku, for more. Hope you enjoy the show. Hey everybody, welcome to Ancast. I'm Zach Bergey. Jake, why did I say that like that?
I'm Zach Bergey.
That was like a weird, like, old computer voice.
Tell me about your problems.
Tell me about your problems. Hey, I'm Zach Bergey. Jacob's here.
Hey, folks.
How's it going, man?
It's going. I'm a little tired, a little worn out, but
now, people like it when you get personal and tell the real story of what happened.
They do like that. That's true. Thank you for pointing, for telling the truth.
Because you're tired, but there's more to the story. Right?
Yeah, I'm in good shape. I'm in a good mood. I'm emotionally in a good mood. I'm just a little tired.
Well, it's just, so we're taping this Friday morning. Mm-hmm. There's a show called RuPaul's Drag Race that's on Thursday nights.
Oh, you're just going to tell the entire...
Jacob goes...
Sometimes I go to
a watch party.
Yeah.
A viewing party. Sometimes they get a little rowdy, is all I'm saying.
I may have needed some Tylenol and some water this morning.
It's just a little.
And rough. I may not have, but, you know, I guess that just depends on people want the truth or not, or whatever thread we're on right now.
All right. Well, let's talk about anime in that case. You're doing okay, though. Everything's cool.
Yeah. Good shape.
We're gonna finish this podcast and then go see Black Panther, which I'm very excited about. So let's get it done, man. Ancient Magus Bride is what we're talking about first this week. Although I said we're gonna catch up on Ancient Magus Bride, and then summarily did not have time to get all the way up on Ancient Magus Bride. I finally finished the first season and the first couple episodes of this season, and boy, is that a well-written show. And let me just get this out. I think the really good thing about the Ancient Magus Bride is an incredibly good show. Like, this is a high-quality production. But here is what I think the quality of the show is. A lot of manga and anime do something like they take an aesthetic and they just sort of, like, treat it like a grab bag. Like, okay, the theme of this is, I don't know, like, ancient Egypt. So I'm just going to pull everything out of the ancient Egypt bag and we'll center an episode around this concept and center an episode around that concept and center a chapter around this concept.
That's just called Yu-Gi-Oh!
Yeah, but you know what I mean, right? You know what I mean? Like, that's the theme. So they can pull from that and you can get a lot of material out of that. So, like, if you decide that ancient Rome is your theme or just Roman history is your theme, you can pull a lot out of that. And so Ancient Magus Bride is kind of like doing that with folklore, right? Like, folkloric creatures. That's kind of what it's doing.
Yeah, well, specifically like Celtic, like old pagan stuff.
They picked a specific thing. And so they're going through that stuff, and it's not effortless. It feels like it takes a long time to write, but the character stuff and those concepts are all very deftly woven together into a very compelling narrative. And then the entire thing is like this tapestry of influences and character, very carefully written character development that really forms a tapestry, a carefully woven tapestry. So, like, the writing is rock solid, and it's like an intricate wicker basket, the way the show is written, the way it's put together.
And it's not like...
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's not like challenging. It's very easy and effortless to watch, but it seems like something that would have taken a lot of brainstorming and sort of thinking about, like, okay, do I start this here? I take them to the fairy kingdom now or whatever or later? And it's like, well, it seems like when working on something like that, you have to think really carefully about when you put a new concept, when you put a new reveal, because the way that these things have been unfolding, it's always been like a little revelatory. Like when Chisei decides to use the cursed item that she's been given, it's always like, oh yeah, that's perfect. Like that seems like it adds to her character. It gives her some growth. So yeah, it seems effortless and it seems easy. And it's not like a challenging show to watch. It's
very basic. If you're thinking about,
but like, yeah,
it's not a challenging show to watch, but mm-hmm. if you're thinking about, boy, how much effort would you have to put in to write something this carefully, intricately kind of connected to itself? Like, that's, I don't know. It just
feels
seems
like a complete world, and the characters feel like they grow very organically from each little thing that happens when it happens.
Yeah. I'm just saying, that's very challenging to
write.
And
no
the
doubt.
Show, and the show, that seems like the show's particular quality to me, beyond just how pretty it is and how much I like the characters and the concepts and everything. Mm-hmm. I really liked the end of the first season. I thought it was, especially the stuff with the guy. I'm really glad that I have a podcast where it's my job to describe these things.
The stuff with the dragon guard guy?
The guy who shepherded Skullhead into this world.
Like, yeah, Dragon Shepherd. Yeah, I forgot his name too, because I'm old.
I really appreciated all that stuff. His backstory, I thought, was told really well. That part of his backstory was told really well. Like, you made that material really interesting and mm-hmm. compelling. And one of the things about that show that I'm continuously amazed at is how organically, and that is the big thing to describe the show. And I think the reason why I want to describe it more as like a wicker basket or like a tapestry than or even like a tree than like a brick wall is because everything feels so organic. Mm-hmm. Things organically, one moment flows organically into the next.
Right.
But they come up with these ways to weave in these set pieces, these aesthetic set pieces. And I don't mean action. I mean, like, there's like a scene where he's like guiding him through the mist into this forest. And the show stops for these. They stop for these visual moments. And mm-hmm. It's what you're looking at is a fantasy concept. And you can mm-hmm. kind of describe it in a single sentence. Like, he is leading him through the mist out of this forest.
Right, but it doesn't feel like
you're there sitting in that moment. Yeah, but it's totally organic. Mm-hmm. It doesn't feel like a set piece.
It doesn't feel
like just happens to happen that way, and you're like, this is so brilliantly put together that you don't notice it. I mean, I notice it because I'm looking for it, but
yeah, it doesn't feel like a detour because the author was like, I just kind of wanted to do this cool image, which undoubtedly she did, but it feels like she has a big list of like the cool images that she wants to do, and is like, all right, well, this one goes here. I think we're ready for this one.
Well, and that's the thing, is that one of the things that I really think the Magus Bride does is that the author has put so much time and effort and research into what it is she's trying to execute on, that Celtic fantasy imagery. Mm-hmm. It's a really specific European fantasy look, and just hammers that so well and gets to these big sweeping shots that you would want to see in something like that. Like, it fulfills your aesthetic expectations for something like that in a way few productions seem capable. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like, aesthetically, it's like a big meal, and you're getting everything you could possibly think of instead of just like, here's a slice of it, or here's the thing you could do with this. It's like, no, you are fully realizing the, you know, world that you want to create, like you were saying. But
I think in adaptation, I think it could be a lot more bold. But
you think so?
Yeah. Well, and you brought this up right when you very first started watching the show, which is that the adaptation is a little bit like Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood-y, where it's just like, oh, you're just kind of copying the manga panels, and there's not a whole lot of like really. There's not a lot of daring. It's just very well produced. So, like, I think it could be. I feel like the manga might be a little bit more of a raw experience, a raw way to experience this material. But from what I've looked at, I actually did look at some of the manga, just the first like two volumes, after the show started, and I was like, yeah, this seems like more raw, closer to the source. While the adaptation has been really well produced, but. It feels like it's a little bit, it's polished almost to a fault. But this is a nitpick. The story is really good. The story is what I care most about. And, what was I going to say? Oh, right. The only misstep that I feel that the story has been in terms of like repeating itself, because mostly it's just sort of this very natural growth for these characters where, Yeah, you're just traipsing through set pieces, and each one adds a little bit and adds a little bit, and it really feels like you're consuming like a full meal. The only place that I think it stumbles is I think it got kind of repetitive with the threats on Chisei's life and her need to fight back. Like the so when she goes to the Fairy Kingdom and it's like a test, the doctor, I think she's a changeling, right? So the changeling doctor who's healing her, like, in order to fully heal her in this magic spring or whatever, she has to like act like she's trying to kill her. And the problem with that is, like, we've now seen this in the story done several times, and it was a little like, okay, we know Chisei wants to live. She doesn't have to prove her desire to grow up, to survive these 3 years, and to have an adulthood. Like, she doesn't have to prove that anymore. So I thought it was a little repetitive, but like, that's it. Everything else feels like, oh, this is the time for this to happen. I think that maybe that just happened then because she wanted to take Chisei to the Fairy Kingdom, but she didn't know what was going to happen there that was going to have stakes, maybe, and so she just repeated that beat. And it's repeated a couple times when it seems like they need to add some conflict. They'll just repeat the beat of somebody's trying to kill Chisei and she has to, like, not succumb to it. She has to be like, no, I don't want to die, actually. But, like, we got past that. Like, we know. The big Phoenix thing, the end of the first half, like, the big Phoenix thing should, I think, put the kibosh on repeating that conflict again. But everything else has been really good. And, you didn't get to this part yet, I don't think. But now Chisei has started rescuing Elias as well. Like, she started, like, fully just going, I'm going to take the initiative and make sure he's okay and get him out of bad situations and
stuff. Now, I don't want to I'm not trying to be like, oh, I'm so much smarter than this show is or whatever, but I feel as though I saw that coming.
Well, yeah, but seeing it, it's different when you see it. Of course, you hope that happens.
Look, the show executes on this stuff better than I could imagine, so I'm sure it'll be great.
You hope that
I'm on
that
episode
happens.
15 or so. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the one I just watched was the one with where she resolves the vampire old man
right
thing, which is kind of like, it was all right, I guess. There's stronger material in the show for sure.
Yeah, I liked it, but yeah.
It's good. I'm just comparing it to other episodes of The Ancient Magus Bride. And by that comparison, it was fine, but not one of the super good ones.
Big titty vampire learning to love.
When she gave him his vision, like, he doesn't...
He'd be like, put some clothes on.
He'd just be like, damn, all right. You've been hanging out here for how long?
It's cold. I don't...
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway...
Yeah. I think the only like quibble is that I had with it is that towards the end of the first season, it started getting into the like, oh, let's reflect on our magical life together, like, way too often, like too many scenes of like our idyllic life, like just a little too much.
It's time to shear the sheep.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, no, I liked that. Like,
I liked it too, but I mean,
the episode slows and there's no more dialogue and it's like a montage of our happy life.
Oh, okay.
There's too many of those. It's literally a dumb quibble. I can't think of anything else to say, so there you go.
I liked it too, but the scene of the magic fairy sheep that must be sheared, I was like, all right, so this is taking like a pastoral, like a chore, basically, like an unfun thing about living in the countryside and turning it into like this effort, and they're even framing it as a chore. It's like, oh, gotta shear all these sheep, and this seems like this is like the most fun, magical, adorable thing ever. It's like, you can't make this look like a chore. You know?
They're gonna have like cutesy poo versions of farm work.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, there'll be some sort of animal milking that will be super cute and not at all disgusting and awful.
Yeah, right? It's not really a criticism. It's not a criticism so much as it is an exposure of, oh, well, this is a fantasy. Like, this is a shoujo fantasy. This is a Beauty and the Beast, like, fairy tale.
Yeah.
If I were in Chisei's position sort of story.
Totes.
Like, there's nothing wrong with that, but it is funny to, like, point it out sometimes because you're like, oh, it's a serious drama about growth and this, that, the other. And it's like, but this is also, like, lady porn, like, hardcore. It's fun.
It's a high quality show.
But so you haven't got. Do we want to talk about the thing that happened recently? You haven't gotten there yet, but it's the thing that I think people are definitely talking about in the show.
Yeah, so sure. I mean, look, it's my fault. I didn't get to it. I was on a writing deadline. I had to write comics this week and really wanted to watch Darling in the Franxx, and so I had to make a choice. Mm-hmm. And I got through as much of Magus Bride as I could. But since it's my fault, it's fine. Go ahead. I'll watch the other episodes probably after we get back from Black Panther anyway. So go ahead.
Okay, so when the show started, there were a lot of people who noped out because it was like, I don't... You know what? Not a lot of people. There were some people who noped out. Because this is a really popular show. I think most people were like, no, I'm down. But there was, you know, a significant minority of people who were like, look, I can't with the slavery, ownership, master, beast thing. Like, I just can't with it.
Yeah.
And it's understandable. But since then,
I would say completely understandable.
Mm-hmm. But since then, there have been, like, if you got in at episode one, there hasn't been really anything to turn you off since then. Like, even the forays into, like, oh, he wants to eat her, or oh, he's a monster of some kind that, like, she is in some kind of danger. I don't think that was enough to turn people off. So the most recent episode, it got problematic enough that some people had to nope out again.
Uh-oh, problematic?
Well, and it wasn't to me. I enjoyed it, but I, you know, I get it. But, like, basically, Chisei has made friends, right? So, and most of her friends were in the magical community. They're all, her friends were Elias's friends for the most part. And, but it was really good. So talking about girl porn fantasies, this is one thing that a lot of them don't do that makes them more uncomfortable sometimes. And it's something that Magus Bride does and does beautifully. And it's, and I think it really fleshes out the world and just makes it more enjoyable and accessible to a wider audience, which is that Chisei has friends who aren't Elias. It's not just her living in this house with this beast. Like, it's, she has other outlets and she goes to them and she actually has more intimate conversations with a lot of those people than she does Elias, because he's not capable of that yet. Cause he's, you know, he's got his issues. So that's an important thing that the show does. However, she just made a friend who's not one of Elias's friends. She's like a normal girl, and they were having like normal girl time.
Mm-hmm.
And Elias got really upset about it and ran away. He didn't do anything. He got sad and ran. He just left the house. And Chisei, immediately is like, something's wrong. I got to go after him. I don't think he's well. So she, which was really laudable. I was like, right in that moment, she knows something's wrong. And she's like, if you'll excuse me, I got to go see if he's okay. And so she goes to see if he's okay. And he eats her. He just stuffs her down his gullet. And, the rest of the episode is her coaching him through, is like trying to comfort him, trying to coach him through these feelings he's having a jealousy, which he just doesn't understand. He's never felt this way before. He's jealous, he's angry, and he's very frightened. And it's uncomfortable, it's scary, because like there's a scene, it's really good, it's really like human. It's not like an over-the-top, like stereotypical, teach me human, what are these feelings sort of thing. It's frightening, because she's like reaching out to like touch his head and comfort him, and she's like, it's okay. And his response to that show of affection is to cling to her, ties to suck her in more. He like bites her shoulder and squeezes her closer. So she's like, okay, this was a mistake. And the thing I like about the scene, but I under, so for a lot of people, like, nope, I can't with this. Like, obviously this is a dangerous situation. And, you know, if he's that horribly jealous and doesn't want her to see people, like, that's too much of a trigger for me and I can't watch it. And I get it. But, like, I liked it because she's not like, oh, I can't see people, I have to pacify him. That never enters into the equation. She's like, I have to do whatever it takes to survive this, but also, like, let him know that he is loved and he's safe and stuff like that, which is kind of, those are at odds with each other. Those aren't mutually compatible motives, you know? So yeah, it's a complicated, scary situation where she's wanting to comfort him, but also doesn't want. She's not like, I'm okay with him abusing me. She's not okay with that. She's not okay with him biting her or whatever. Like, she doesn't want to get eaten. So it was really interesting, and I liked the scene a lot. But it is intense and
yeah,
probably upset people for understandable reasons. The thing that she does to get him to let go is she takes a knife and like puts it to her throat, and she's like, you know, if you squeeze me harder, this is going to go in harder. And that's what breaks him out of it, because you know, he's like, oh, I don't want to lose this person. So, and she's manipulating him. She has no intention of actually killing herself. If she did, that would be really fucked up. But it's just a fake out. She's just trying to do whatever she can to get him to let go. But, you know, it is a little much for people, I think. But I thought it was really interesting and, like, yes, problematic, but, like, you know, it's problematic in a way that seems very real and seems like what, you know, people who are with someone who has a family member or somebody that they're seeing that has developmental issues or whatever the case may be, like, would probably see a lot of, would probably relate to that scene a lot. It was really good, but it's really uncomfortable to watch. And if you think, like, romantically, there's no way something like this could work out, then nope out. Like, I totally get it. But so most people were talking about that whole thing.
Hmm. Well, I'll look forward to seeing the episode myself. That sounds, I don't know. I'm of a couple of different minds on that. Like, I think that in, especially in a case like this, it definitely boils down to, like, what are you comfortable with personally?
Mm-hmm.
It's not really a... Because I feel like it always edges towards, like, oh, this is bad, and you're bad if you watch it and talk about it.
That's not what I'm trying to say. I'm saying, I guess it's like...
But no, but people treat it like that.
Mm-hmm.
That's the annoying thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you're not allowed to have a personal reaction to it. You can't say, like, well, this doesn't bother me because I feel like I understand what the author's going for, and I don't think that they're endorsing it or saying, you know, whatever it is you're pulling out of it, I don't necessarily agree with that, or that's not the way it strikes me. And I think that's valid. That's totally valid.
Yeah, and there's a difference between seeing something as a fantasy, as basically as hot or as romantic in a fantastic way, and condoning it in life. And I think that Megas Bride trips that line really, really well for people who have experience, like, separating those things, I guess. How do I put this? It is supposed to be hot. It is supposed to be a fantasy, but it is not saying that romantically this is acceptable in a real-life partnership, which is why Chisei isn't like, oh, okay, she doesn't bow to his, you know, to his... She isn't abused or coerced by him in any way. But it's playing up this scene where she's in real danger because that's also supposed to be kind of hot, I guess. So it's having its cake and eating it too a little bit. And if you separate those things, like, this is my fantasy, but I know what's right and wrong in the real world and I know what a healthy relationship is, then that's kind of what the show, what the material is playing at. But this doesn't take into account that everybody has their own personal sort of triggers and responses to stuff that might remind them of bad situations that they've been in and stuff that is just a big turn off or just that's upsetting to them. So that's a completely separate issue. So that just kind of overrides however else you feel about it. But, you know, I think the show is very considerate in how it's trying to depict this in terms of, like, this is a fantasy, but also I'm not going to just, it's not so much a fantasy that I'm going to normalize, behavior that's taught to girls about, like, oh, you know, the bad part of the Beauty and the Beast fantasy. It doesn't gloss over that, which that stuff is mostly cliches. Like, it's trying to avoid cliches and talk about complex emotions. So I appreciate that.
Okay, well, I look forward to seeing that episode for myself and making a call on that. Like I said, I'm of several minds, I think, on how that might play out. But speaking of questionable relationship dynamics, the other show, the show that I made time to watch this week was Darling in the Franxx. Which is, I feel like more people, like, it's generating more conversation this season than just about anything else.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like it feels like that's definitely what's happening, especially, like, traffic, like, reviews, traffic and stuff. Like, that's, yeah, I don't think people love the show. In fact, it seems to be far from that, but mm-hmm. it certainly is giving people a lot of talk about it. Anyway, I watched it. The five episodes or so that are out. It's, you know, it's
a bit on the nose, isn't it?
It's, well, you know what? About what, though? Like, you want to say that it's a bit on the nose, but, like, to what end?
Well, I don't mean thematically, because I don't know what it's about yet. I'm not saying it's
well,
a bit
its
on the
metaphors
message.
Would be on the nose, except they don't appear to be pointing anything concrete mm-hmm. yet. So I can't really say that it's on the nose, other than that it has a bunch of imagery in it that seems as though it would be on the nose if thematically it seemed to be pointing at much of anything.
Mm-hmm. But what I meant, I guess, by that is that it is on the nose in terms of the way that it's portraying these old tropes and cliches and, I guess, like, things that make up the genre that it is in, and the genre is post-Ava hybrid mech series, it just takes all those things and is just the most literal with them. What is the most literal way that we can do this? Like, it's been done this way, that way, the other way in, like, Erica Seven and Razafon.
Well, what things are they? What is it saying?
Teenager in... Well, I see. I don't know what it's saying. I'm saying the imagery that it's using is it's taking that imagery and just being, like, extremely literal with it in terms of cribbing shots from famous examples of the genre, making the mechs equals sex thing really literal. You know,
yeah,
it's just
like,
very on the nose, right?
Right. Yeah, I guess I get your phrasing there. It's just on the nose usually refers to, like, thematically. So, like,
mm-hmm.
oh, it's really on the nose about what it's saying.
Right.
It's like, but what it's not. So, like,
aesthetically, it is aesthetically on the nose. There we go.
This is a, terrifying vision of the future in which a society of elders generates progeny and selects the ones with the highest possible chance of successfully coupling up to pilot the Franks, which is a robot thing, kind of, because it's not really a robot, whatever the fuck it is. It's a mech that they use to fight the, what the hell are they called?
The
Caucasaurs?
No, no, I just, I'm smiling before I say it. I'm like, they're called the Klaxosaurs.
Klaxosaurs, yeah, which is a very late 90s.
Yeah, it's fun to say, but it's almost more fun to read. Every time I see it in a subtitle, it makes me laugh.
It just makes me think of the video game Klax. That's it. Yeah. But so they're fighting these things, and there's the main protagonist, Kuhn, failed out basically and can't do it. But until he meets a Spitfire named Unit 02, who has pink hair, has sort of lavender hair, and wears a red outfit, similar to a character named Asuka Langley Soryu, who appears in another television show called Neon Genesis.
Who drove a mech called Unit 02.
Anyway, it turns out that when he pilots the Franks with her, they fuck shit up. They lay it down. Like, it's the end of the world when those two pilot together. But he can't get it up for anyone else. He can't do that with anyone else. And if he pilots the robot with her two more times, he'll fucking die. She'll kill him. Mm. Her piloting, robot piloting is so crazy. And he's just trying to tame the stallion, yeah. Jacob.
Yeah.
He seems like a mild-mannered guy on the outside, but
so speaking
boy,
of,
he only wants a demon in the sack, I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, well,
that's all he can. It's a secret depth to him. He looks like a boring nerd on the outside, but boy, underneath boils a man who can only be satisfied by an untamable sexual beast. Darling in the Franks.
So, aesthetically on the nose, right? So, that reminds me, in the most literal, like, basically the most... Sorry, I don't know how to follow that except to just...
That's what's happening in the show.
Yeah, that's what's happening.
There's a whole episode about how,
you're just describing what's happening.
There's a whole episode where it's like, normal girls don't fucking do it for me. Mm-hmm. Normal girls like you, mm-hmm. No fucking good to me, but I'm an ace pilot with this...
Well, so in order to make... Here's the thing. So in order to make him sympathetic, the way that this is framed is that he feels inadequate. Mm. So it's not... So the way you're describing it would be like a show
poor
that I think
guy.
Would make everybody hate him. But, like, it's... And you kind of... It's basically, it's just keeping all that stuff... What you're saying is completely accurate, but it's just flipping the framing so that instead he's the inadequate one because he can't get it up with anybody who's not, like, the best and most amazing pilot. And so, you know, but it, you know, nobody's biting this. We've seen this 1,000 times in anime. It's like a self-pitying, like, oh, I'm the worst, but I'm actually the best. We've seen it.
The most fascinating and craziest women can fucking do it for me.
Yeah. Well, so, okay, so...
I like crazy girls.
The thing that I wanted to say, so, like, the most aesthetically on the nose, right? Because he goes into the bathroom after he's been wounded by her, and they just show, just with no fucking sense of irony or subtlety or anything, they just show a fucking moth in the bathroom that he's watching with his eyeline, and they've, like, compared him to butterfly flying things before, so we know that, like, that's supposed to be him, in case it couldn't be more obvious. Literally flying into a spider's web and a spider eating it. Because yeah. They just, like, come on, guys, you can't be, like, we have a million of these kinds of shows, and they are kind of based on getting weird and surreal with your imagery and with, like, you know, even the stuff that's dumb, like, usually they try to be weirder with the imagery. Like, Darling in the Franks is just, like, what is the fruit that is on the ground? And I say this, like, not insulting it, because it's very entertaining. This is not, like, I'm not trying to dismiss it.
No, I don't think you get it. I don't think you get it. The way you're describing, I don't think you get it. It's subtle, but let me finish. In that metaphor... the moth is him.
Okay.
And the spider.
See, you can't even joke about, like, that's the thing. Like, this show is joke proof. It's a little joke proof. the show is a little bit joke proof because it's just like, it's not like this is a new concept. This genre has been done over and over, and this genre also attracts people who like to overthink the metaphor, and they like to overthink the weird techno babble.
Oh, come on, don't do that. Don't do the thing where you're like, oh, this attracts this type of person.
No, I mean, no, it attracts
I like
lots
those
of
kinds of shows. I actually love those kinds of shows,
I do too.
Which is why I'm watching this one.
I do too. Let me finish. I do too. This is not, none of this is meant to be insulting.
Well, don't generalize about the audience. Just.
Okay, yeah. I'm not. I'm saying that people who like Erica Seven and Aquarian and all that stuff, Star Driver, like, you know, a lot of times they want to think about because this is a genre that was spawned from Evangelion. They want to think about what they're looking at, and they want to like try to guess what's going to happen and what this stuff means. They do. They like the
right.
puzzle box.
No, I just think that's a better way to phrase it. That's all.
Okay. Right? People like that puzzle boxy aspect, and what I'm saying is, Darling in the Franxx, for better or for worse, because I'm not saying that this is an inherently negative thing. I don't know that it is. It's just, it doesn't give you any of that. You're not like, what does this mean? It's just plain. Like, it's really easy to tell what everything means at all times. It's like, all right, you're just going for the apple that's on the ground. But its goal is to be entertaining and fun and intriguing. And so it succeeds in that because it's easy to watch, it's fun to watch, and I want to know what happens next. So all that stuff is successful, I am surprised by just how much they're like, what's the easiest, most fucking obvious thing that we could do that nobody else has done because it's too obvious? Let's do it. Like, it's a little bit, I'm a little surprised by that.
Yeah. So the other thing, but I'm curious to know where it's going to go, because surely it's not just going to be like the anime version of one of those like shitty old crazy girlfriend songs from the late 90s and the early 2000s. Like, she wears a Burger King crown and dances around and I love her. You know, those kind of songs, like
manic
where she's crazy and I can't. Yeah, it's that hoary old cliche manic pixie dream girl, right? Mm-hmm. But it's a little bit edgier than that. Like, it's trying to be a little edgier than that. There's that element to it. But here's the other story is Society of Elders forces next generation into couplings. They're forced couplings, basically, that are then used to drive war machines to fight against a environmental threat that is brought on by what appears to be the extraction of natural resources from the planet. That seems like it is the scenario that they have set up. Ripe for something, right? The tree is that fruit is blooming. There's something that are they maybe they're going to do something with that.
I mean, look, I'm in the same boat with you with like 5 episodes into this. Usually with these kinds of shows, it's so weird that usually with these kinds of shows, you can get a feel for what they might be trying to say, but the imagery is not super obvious. This is like, I mean, the imagery is so obvious, which means you think you should be able to tell maybe what they're trying to say, because if everything you're showing us is the most on the nose thing in the world, then it makes sense that you would be able to tell where the show is going thematically, but you fucking can't tell at all.
But like, I'm not even sure that all of that is totally, like, am I supposed to be picking up those pieces, or am I just desperately looking for something, anything?
Right, well, so I think the manic, I think you know? The, I think the 90s butt rock song that you're describing is subtext, and if they just completely commit to it 100%, then, like, bruh, you know, like,
yeah.
Then I won't be surprised, but it would be subtextual. That would be accidental. That would be, like, this guy really thinks that that's, like, the frightening monster of woman is a new fucking thing to do, and it's not. So I hope that that's I really hope that that's not where they go.
Well, you know what? The show looks really good.
Yeah,
It is well animated. I really do like the character designs. It's got just enough of that. You know, the people working on it have a specific flair. They're very good at it. The color design's really nice. It's well paced. Like, it's a solid and entertaining show, and I'm glad that it exists, and I'm enjoying watching it. No fucking idea what it's gonna say, and deeply curious to find out what. And so far, it's like, don't know what you're gonna say, but yeah, a lot of people were like, episode 5 just turned it all around, and I was like, no, Not really.
No, it was just really well directed.
It was well directed, though.
It was really well storyboarded and animated and stuff like that. Like, prior to that, it was a little more workmanly. Okay, it wasn't workmanly.
The whole episode had, there's a scene. Okay, now, 90s kids will know what I'm talking about here. There's a scene, one of the things, I always point to this, there's a scene in the episode, part one of Who Shot Mr. Burns, the Simpsons episode, where towards the end of the episode, it actually gets some foreboding going. And there is a shot of a handgun in a cigar box having been dug out of the ground. And it's like, wind is blowing and the lid of the cigar box is banging around. Now, I always thought that shot was like, this is actually incredibly effective dread building. Like, very effective. This one shot here. Uh-huh. The whole episode five was like that one shot of the cigar box.
Right.
With the building. Yeah. And the episode ends without any resolution and you know it's coming. Uh-huh. That's like a really specific atmosphere for a show to get right. Uh-huh. And it totally got that in episode five.
It was,
so cool. So good on, so good for them.
It was easily better than the other four. Like, it was easily the best episode of the show. But story-wise, did it turn everything around? No, it didn't change anything story-wise. It was just really well done. Like, I was going to say workmanly. There are a couple episodes that were a little workmanly, but I am wrong because the first two were just, what is the pacing and tone and feel of Evangelion? Let's do that. Like, that's what the fucking first episode, first two-ish were. So that's not workmanly. That's just taking someone else's.
Yeah.
That's just ripping somebody's.
Well, specifically style. Rebuild. Like, they really just lifted straight from Rebuild.
Yeah, shot for shot, shot length for shot length. Sound design. Just, and I know people are like, no, this is common to a lot of mech shows. I'm not saying that they didn't take ideas from other shows. Like, clearly the mech designs are Star Driver esque, and I think it's the same designs.
They look
same
like
artist.
Fucking like 90s Dreamcast. RPG characters.
Yeah, I should clarify.
Like kids card collecting show from 1999. Mm-hmm. That's what it looks like.
Mega
Man Sonic OCs.
It's a blend between, it's a blend between Star Driver and Hero Man that, in my humble opinion, does not look as good as either of those. Like, I don't care for the design.
If you change the faces, I think I'd be okay with it, but mm-hmm. They don't look good to me.
No, I don't. Yeah,
Mega Man and Sonic OC, I think it's really.
That's perfect. Yeah, that. But
somehow a mashup of those two things.
Yeah. So I understand that there are many, many elements that are taken from aesthetically and design wise that are taken from a bunch of other mech shows. I get that, but there's a reason that people who have seen Evangelion several times are telling you no. They took directorially in terms of shot choice and storyboarding and sound design and like trying to replicate the cinematic feel of a thing. It's Evangelion specifically, and yeah, it's that show specifically. They knew what they were doing. This is Evangelion, but you know, like there's lots of influences, and they stepped away from that. The episodes 3 through 5 have had a different feel entirely, I think. But it's, you know, they for sure when they started out were like, all right, let's echo the storyboarding and the like. Basically the tone of Rebuild. So they just decided they want to do that and good on them, I guess.
Definitely. But like I said, I will be watching it week to week from here to the end. Very curious to see where it goes. Let's take some Twitter questions. Mm-hmm. How about it? All right. Grant the Thief wants to know, what absurd robot control system would you guys like to see become a trope in anime? Serious or jokey works. Bonus points if it's both. Okay, so in Darling in the Franxx, one of the reasons people actually make such a big deal out of the show is that the way you pilot the robot is, girl gets in front on her hands and knees, sticks her ass in the air, dude gets behind her in a standing position, and she has these giant handles on her ass.
You can just say doggy style.
It's just doggy style. And
you pilot the robot with doggy
style. Yeah, and they scream things like, oh, you're so deep inside me when they're piloting. Anyway, so, I mean, I can think of a lot of things more scandalous and weird than doggy styles.
Yeah, well, it's not even that weird, right? It's just like, why hasn't anyone done this? Well, because it seems like a joke and it's too obvious and playing it straight would be weird.
Yeah.
Why hasn't anyone done this? Like, why do you think?
Yeah. Well, it is funny and kind of...
It's funny, but the show is taking it completely seriously.
But that's how you have to do it.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it would be like, look how zany we are. That would be intolerable.
Yeah, but I don't know how to feel about it. I can't take it seriously.
You're saying that Darling in the Franxx has sent you spiraling into a crisis of confidence.
No, I'm just like, I don't know what to say about this. Like, I'm just like, I just kind of, I don't want to, I can't believe it was made because it's not that weird, right? It's just, it's like, this is so obvious. I don't understand it. So anyway, I have to see where it's going. Basically, I have nothing to say
like
about it.
It would be like if Shinji gets into Eva 01 and his mom is just in there.
Yeah.
She's right? Like, hey, Shinji, what's going on?
And
let's work through your problems together.
Right. So it's kind of dumb, but that's not necessarily, like, dumb can be good and it can be fun. Like, you know, look at Gurren Lagann, but like, or a lot of Trigger stuff, to be honest. But like, I just don't know where it's going yet. It's definitely taking itself very seriously. So despite the imagery. So I'm like, all right, let's just see where this is going.
Absurd robot control system. Boy, it's tough to come up with a concept for that right off the top of my head. It's like writing comics.
You have to do burpees to make the robot go.
Oh, jeez. I get through like...
It's like, we're done. It takes two steps.
I can do like... Well, last time I went to a CrossFit thing, I did... We had to do like 20 and then... I could probably do them for like half... No, God, half an hour. I'm going to stop talking about burpees now. Anyway.
Yeah. Well, I'm just saying, like, that's what makes the robot's legs move.
Yeah.
So that would be really... You wouldn't get real far, I don't think.
I'm trying to consider it. I'm going to think about it. Maybe I'll come up with something.
You'll think about it and put it in a future Vice and Luna.
Yeah, you'll see it in a Vice and Luna. Although we already did a Darling in the Franxx comic, so... By the time I'll be writing more, there won't be, like... The way we write that, we write them a month in advance, and we write a month at a time. So right now I'm writing strips that arrive in April, so we have to do jokes for, like, My Hero Academia, you know, that kind of shit.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway. Let's see. Leah of the Rebellion asks, were you disappointed when it turned out Hero and Unit 02 were piloting the robot the same way everyone else did instead of the reverse position some had speculated? Well, that certainly would have been more interesting. If, like, the dude had been in the prone position and she had been...
Well, yeah, that would have been...
More interesting.
Right? I would have been like, what is this saying? This is different. This is weird.
This is
weird and interesting. And not, oh, this is not interesting. This is the most obvious thing. So, yeah. Then I would have been like, oh, this is different. And not like, oh, a shot of a moth flying into a spider web to symbolize our hero meeting 02. You know, or getting...
Well, that would really got you, huh?
I think it's the easiest. I could point to other metaphors. That's the most. Come on. So I can pick that one to be like, this is what this show is like. It does this completely sincerely to convey dread without a scrap of irony. Like, that's the kind of show this is.
Let's see. Julian Moran asks, would you say Magus Bride has slowed down and lost too much focus? Well, I'm only on episode 15, like I said. So far, no. Jacob, what would you say?
I kept the second half of that. What was it?
Would you say that Magus Bride has slowed down and lost too much focus?
No, I would say that it was always a sort of slow burning, kind of complicated character drama with the trappings of a girl porn thing, and therefore you kind of got to be in for that or not in for that. If you've read like a lot of shoujo manga, it's like it's slow burn, and that's what this is. It is a slow burn. So I don't think weirdly this has more like spiked conflicts that aren't cliche than, because usually shoujo stuff like that, like to give it immediate conflict because so much of it is just slow boiling of emotions and they have to give it a sharper conflict, they'll put in like a rape threat or someone has to move or something like that. And Magus Bride, you know, it's she's been kidnapped by an old mage who turned her into a fox. You know, it's like, oh. You know, so they have more creative, like, sudden immediate conflicts just to keep the pace up.
Yeah, I thought that episode was kind of like, the Fox one was kind of like, so is it like, okay, I'm going to give you the instincts of an animal towards their, whatever it is, wherever it is they think they need to go. Like, you're going to feel that instinct. If you feel that instinct and you still want to go back to him, then you're supposed to be together?
No, he said specifically, like, this, it just puts her into the body of a lower animal, but it's going to be her pure id. Basically, it just releases her pure id, and her first instinct because of her past is to escape, is to like just keep running and running until she feels, you know, free and safe. But she stops It, which is what happened in the first episode when she went to the Vale of the Fairies, where she was going to go to the Vale of the Fairies. It's just
so she's it's just kind of excising that instinct.
Well, yeah, it's just
or giving it a release valve.
Well, he's just a trickster. He just wanted to see what would happen.
Yeah, he seems like an asshole.
He's just an asshole. And
but it serves a purpose. That's what I'm saying. For the purpose and the purpose, the purpose that it serves in the story is release valve for this desire to escape.
Yeah, well, it was a test. It was like, have you healed past this point?
Which is what I was just talking.
And then
about.
She just gets an item. And then she just gets an item in her inventory after that.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, like. Get past the point, I guess, like, I would say Magus Bride is actually faster than the genre that it comes from, but maybe because it went mainstream, unlike a lot of the shoujo type stuff, maybe people who haven't ingested a lot of that aren't used to it, so they're seeing it more as, like, a fantasy story, which it is, but it's like, well, no, like, this comes from a genre that is pure emotional wallow that's slow, you know? It just happens to be more mainstream than most of that stuff. But this is where it comes from. Like, it's by all means not going to be, like, a super plot-driven sort of thing.
All right. Josh Caleb asks, I've seen it talked about, and it's not subtle from the clips, but Frank's entire mecha conceit seems to be a giant metaphor for sex, and possibly Japanese teenagers' unpreparedness for relationships and sex. Well, I think maybe that's a bridge too far.
Yeah, we don't
know yet. Is this accurate? Does Trigger A1 pull it off? It's too soon to say. On the surface, definitely. And, like, that's the joke. That's the gimmick they're going for, right? It's a big, stupid, that's what she said joke. Mm-hmm. They have the thing. The kids are like, oh, what's going on? And then they say stuff that sounds like they're fucking.
Well, the thing that makes it weird, the thing that makes it weird and it's like, well, how can you have something like this and not know at all what the story is saying? Because the kids don't know what sex. Mm. They don't know what kissing is. They don't know what sex is. They don't get aroused. There's no direct connecting this to sexuality. It's just you watching through a keyhole and going, I know what this means, but the kids don't. Which, A, is kind of weird and creepy, but B, like, giving the best, like, assuming the best, it just means that you don't know how this connects to actual sexual themes, because the kids don't, this is not connected to their personal libido, really. I mean, it is kind of, but they don't know that, so you don't know what to think of it yet.
Yeah, it's too early to say. Firquin Root asks, how pervasive is foodie culture nowadays? It's become its own genre in anime, and I see foodies popping up in anime a lot. What are your favorite foodie shows or references? I feel foodie culture has peaked a couple years ago and is now on the wane. It seems like a lot of things, once we kind of fully entered the age of communication, things like, here's how to cook and here's how to take care of yourself, like, that information became a lot more, like, easier to access, and so people got access to a higher level of information about how to take care of themselves and how to cook and shit, so, you know, they got interested in doing it at a higher level. Mm-hmm. More people did in a broader way, and the more information spread about how to take care of yourself and how to eat right, well, the more people got interested in it, right? Mm-hmm. But foodie culture seemed to peak a couple of years ago with, like, celebrity chefs and reality TV and everything like that. Mm-hmm. Personally, I found it, you know, as somebody who has a complicated and kind of fucked up relationship with food, you know, I spent most of my life thinking that, oh, no one would ever want me to talk about food, me, a disgusting fat man. No one would want to watch that person talk about food or eating, right? That's the complex that I had about it for a very long time. Mm. So I didn't really discuss it or talk about it. And food, I still have kind of a weird relationship with it, even now having lost all the weight. but it seems to me that just a couple of years ago it peaked, and now we're kind of... It's kind of in an evening out period. I don't hear about that stuff and as much as I used to. I have, like, a lot of foodie friends, and their kind of fervor for it has faded. And not that they've lost interest in it, but it's not such an active hobby anymore. You know what I mean? Like, they're not like, I'm going to spend my afternoon shopping for locally sourced greens at my local farmer's market. Like, they have their routines. They know what they want. They eat better now, and they eat better on average, and they know what to look for better, and their tastes have all evolved. But they're not like, I'm a foodie, and that's me. A foodie, you know, and that was definitely, like, a type of person, like, a couple of years ago.
I think it still is
definitely, but not as much. Does that ring true to you?
I don't have a lot of experience in that, so I'll take your word for it.
Okay. Yeah, that's kind of what it seems like to me. There is a lot of foodie anime, though, and plenty of it. I'm not super into it for all the reasons that I just said. Like, I'm not like, food, let's talk about food. Like, I'm just not that dude, and I don't know that I ever will be. So, like, I'm not super into, like, Food Wars or, you know, I think that's kind of the go-to. I do like food. I prefer food manga. If I'm going to read manga, and I like to learn while I'm reading about food. So there are plenty of stuff, and for whatever reason, I'm blanking on the name of the one that Viz did. Very long-running manga series that goes through traditional and non-traditional Japanese food and, like, teaches you a little bit about it, where it comes from, how it's made, that kind of thing. Very long-running, and for some reason, I'm blanking on the name right now. But that is one of the ones that I really appreciate. And that is a big thing, is that I like to learn while I'm reading. If it's food, I want to learn. I don't want to just look at food and think about eating it, 'cause that – I don't want that.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. That's why Food Wars, I think, is so popular, is because it really, really gets into why something tastes the way it does, or something tastes the way it does, exactly what they did to prepare it, but it doesn't, like, have a cooking sequence before, because everything's about the reveal.
Yeah.
So you'll see the thing first, and you have no idea how they made it, and then when somebody, like, comes from eating it, then they describe exactly how it was made, but they do it in direct relation to the flavor, which I never really voiced before, but I realize now that that is probably what makes it the most popular foodie thing in anime, is because it's so it just knows how to play the drama, I guess. It knows how to even if you don't eat much food or aren't a foodie, I'm definitely not, it knows how to play up the drama and make learning fun, I guess. It's it's like, I'm going to educate you, but I'm going to make it feel like you're having, like, a big like emotional climax or other kind of climax in a story. But I'm just teaching you how to make this thing, you know, basically.
Okay. All right. Let's see here. Also from Furk and Root, haven't really gotten into Darling in the Franxx because it seems overwhelming just with episode 1. I keep falling asleep when I try to watch it. Am I the only one like this? I want to enjoy it, but I feel like this is the first trigger anime I can't get into. Well, it's not a trigger anime. It's an A1 Pictures anime. There's a bunch of people working on it. Really, people say it's a Gainax anime, and, like, they can't really agree on, like, exactly whose anime
right.
it is.
Right, so this is breaking down the old, like, you can't judge a thing by a studio. Oh, you can judge a thing by a studio. And it's like, well, that's case by case. Sometimes you can judge things by studio, and sometimes you can't. This is a big example of can't, because not only because it's a joint production between two studios, but also because the staff, which trade different studios a lot, like the writer and a lot of the artists and stuff like that, are mostly old Gainax staff. So some of them went to Trigger, and some of them went to A1, and some of them have gone to a bunch of different studios. But it's mostly trying to get a group together that is familiar with Gainax aesthetic. Yeah. So there you go. So you kind of have to look at the staff on this one.
Yep.
And know anything.
Another Franxx question, Branko Berkson. Seems pretty popular. Can it break out of the anime ghetto, or is it too weird for that? I really hate that phrase, the anime ghetto.
We need a better. It's a very real thing that exists.
Do you think it could get mainstream attention? No. No.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think so.
It's actually not weird enough, I want to say.
I think that it is playing with stuff that people have seen before a lot and have already said no to.
Yes.
And I'm not saying that you can't change your mind. I'm just saying it's not special enough for that. It's not special enough to break out that far.
Mm-hmm.
Like, people are talking about it, but it's not gonna.
Yeah, like,
who knows? Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it'll be on Cartoon Network and there'll be Hot Topic, Darling in the Franxx shit.
Yeah. Well, people talk about people. I think to some extent, people think you need to be. People have the misconception that you need to be safe to break out into the mainstream, but you don't. And, like, weirdly enough, Darling in the Franxx, kind of safe for anime.
Just put Pop Team Epic on.
Yeah.
Just put it on Cartoon Network. Just do it now. People will run to it.
Kind of anime the anime. And, like, we really got an example of that when Yuri on Ice broke into mainstream. It's like, but even then, like, Attack on Titan, like, ignoring everything you know about how popular it is. Think about Attack on Titan's premise. It's weird. It's weird, and honestly, you need to be weird and different to break out in the mainstream. Yuri on Ice, kind of weird and different. Pop Team Epic, kind of weird and different. Not that it's broken out in the mainstream, but I see more casual nerds talking about it than other stuff. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's see. Raviolis asks, do you guys still have some hope for Darling in the Franxx subverting itself in some way, like switching up those piloting positions or having a non-heterosexual duo or something, questioning the way gender comes into it? I mean, yes, that would make the show a lot more interesting. And I think the thing is that if it's not doing that, if it doesn't do that, what the fuck is it doing? Mm-hmm. Like, is it just going to play this straight the whole way?
LOL. Anyway.
Is it going to do that the whole time? I don't know. Yeah, it's like we're talking about it now, but it's we're halfway through and it's way too early to say. So,
well, not even halfway through. We're like a quarter of the way.
That's the reason I'm watching it. I have hope that it will do something. Uh-huh. That's the whole reason I'm watching it. So you've identified the reason I'm watching it.
Yeah.
That's what's up.
Yep. There is a pining girl. So there's a girl who is in love with another girl in the show. But it's been subtle. They haven't revealed it yet. I'm sure they're going to spend a whole episode like revealing it like it was a big deal, but everybody's already figured it out. So there's that. But if it's just...
Well, if the internet is good at one thing, it's figuring out which characters want to kiss.
Yeah. If the show is as safe as it's been so far, then it'll just be pining girl who doesn't fully voice her feelings, but they have a big dramatic episode about how she really feels, and then she dies. That's the safest thing to do. Hopefully, it'll be different from that. But I haven't seen the show do anything not safe yet, so I'm waiting. But I have hope. I absolutely have hope. I just don't.
Not safe yet. What are you talking about? Weaving these complex visual metaphors? Did you see that scene where there's a moth?
I swear to God.
In a spider web?
I swan to John.
Do you know in that scene? Like, it might have just seemed random to you.
I swoon to June.
Or maybe a weird artistic choice. But that scene, in that scene, the moth...
Swerg to George.
...is meant to represent the main character.
I squiz.
It's representative of the situation.
Stop it! Stop! Stop it!
Custom Zaku wants to know, do you expect the show to stop being so horny once they get through these early stages? Hard to imagine. Yeah, that's the money. Why would they get rid of the money? Why would they be like, we don't need any of this money. Throw it all away. Just make it so that no one's going to buy these Blu-rays.
Also, even if Trigger is like only 10% involved, which they are more than 10%, but even if they're only 10% involved, it's going to be horny all the way through.
Yeah.
His Trigger is involved.
Come on now. All right, last question. Alex Angelico wants to know, we got a long and involved and complicated thing from a Twitter user named Mark1246. I got your email. I have to be perfectly honest with you. I did not quite understand it. So if you could send me a clarification, let me know what you meant by that. I would appreciate it. But anyway, last question. Are either of you watching A Place Further Than the Universe? No, but I am told I absolutely should, or to hell with me.
Jeez, who told you that? That's pretty harsh.
No one. It's just my personal interpretation.
Yikes.
Anyway, go on.
Am I watching it?
Yeah, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm behind. I'm like 3 episodes behind. I have
it's not really a must watch, like run.
People
to the
talk
TV.
About it like it is.
Yeah,
but
people
I don't
love it,
have
but
that
doesn't mean you and I have to react that way. Like,
yeah, it's fine. Like my reaction to it is that it's fine. I don't. The girls' personalities are more real than most of these kinds of shows, and I appreciate that it has a plot, but I don't think that's quite enough for me, because they're not real. They're just more real than most of these kinds of shows, and that's not quite enough. So I have trouble getting excited about it.
I feel like we should do, maybe right we'll now. Do like the 10 best cute girls doing cute things. And like, I know the show is a lot more than that, but it definitely, people are putting it in that box. Mm-hmm. So like, I don't know, maybe have a conversation around that or discussion about the best of those shows and then get someone who really loves that kind of stuff.
We need a word for, shows like, so I want to put Shirobako in this, but Shirobako just really broke out of that, eventually and fairly quickly. So I don't think it's fair to put it
in. I mean,
there,
the answer is it's a drama. It's a drama.
Right. But I feel like we need, but no, but it's not the same thing as a drama, because it's like a drama with an all female cast, and the female cast is not quite like real women. Like, we need a word for it, you know? So we don't have a word for it. But it's not cute girls doing cute things. It's not that aimless, and it's not that Iyashike. It's like it's a drama with moe elements. We need maybe moe drama or something.
We'll call it Lady Do. There are ladies doing things.
That's terrible.
It's awful.
That's maybe the worst thing you've ever...
That's not. It is not even close to the worst thing I've ever said, Jacob.
Top 20.
I am horribly insulted you would suggest that that is the worst thing I've ever said.
Top 30.
Even that.
Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah, let's wrap it up, man. I want to go to the movies.
Okay.
All right. Okay. That's it. That's all the Twitter questions
we got.
All right. Okay. All right, man. We'll see y'all next week. Hey, next week is our Gundam Wing show. Which we're finally going to get to it. We're finally going to discuss the entirety of Mobile Suit Gundam Wing.
I have a lot of Gundam Wing to watch.
Yeah, sure you do. So do I. Anyway, we'll see y'all next week. Okay, that's our show. Big thanks to Jacob, I guess, for stopping by. He's here all the time. The theme song is Bucharest. It's by the band The New Division. You can check them out at newdivisionmusic.com. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes and Stitcher Play Music. Nope, Google Play Music, Stitcher Radio. That's what it is. Leave us comments and reviews. We really appreciate it. And thank you very much, and I'll see you all next week.